I just want to stress, even though we have not dedicated a segment to the latest on the Bobcat and El Dorado fires, we are closely watching those, and we have some good news. The National Weather Service Los Angeles office has just updated the forecast and says the Santa Ana winds are not as strong as predicted, and the latest trends are down. The National Weather Service also tweeted there's still some gusty northeast winds, mainly in the mountains, but not expecting much at all at the coasts. It'll be adjusting coastal forecasts for cooler temperatures today. So that is some good news. We'll keep you updated throughout the course of the day on the Bobcat fire, which is burning above Azusa, Duarte, and Monrovia in the Angeles National Forest, and the El Dorado fire, which is burning in San Bernardino County near the community of Yucaipa. So we'll keep you updated on any evacuation orders if they come through. Keep it right here on KPCC. But with the latest on COVID-19, UC Davis Children's Hospital Professor of Medicine and Chief of Davis's Pediatric Infectious Diseases Department, Dr. Dean Blumberg. Dr. Blumberg, so good to have you with us again.
Thank you. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. Well, you're perfect as a pediatrician to have with us today, because we just finished a segment talking about L.A. County's ban on trick-or-treating this year out of COVID-19 concerns. Some listeners thought this is an overreach, that with the comparatively low risk to kids, this was the wrong thing to ban to try and control the spread of the virus. Others completely in the corner of L.A. County Public Health. Your thoughts on the ban?
Well, children are at lower risk of getting infected, and of course they're at lower risk of complications also. But that lower risk doesn't mean no risk. And the other thing is they're at risk of transmitting to others, including their parents. And so any kind of activity where you increase contacts is going to increase risk of transmission to everybody in the community, even those who are most vulnerable, for example, those in assisted living facilities or congregate living facilities. So I think it poses a danger to others. And let me just throw one other factor in there, is that the projections are that by the end of October, there will be twice as many daily deaths in California as there are today, and three times as many cases as there are today. So we're expecting higher levels of COVID activity by the time Halloween runs around.
Why? What will make that happen?
Well, we think it's due to the increased risk of transmission during the fall and winter, because coronaviruses traditionally have been easier to transmit during the winter due to the colder weather and the humidity.
All right. We also have Orange County movie theaters reopening with a limit on 25% capacity or 100, whichever is the lower number. So if it's a very large auditorium, it would be 100 tops, regardless of percentage. Smaller auditoriums, 25%. Indoor dining at 25% of capacity with certain rules in effect. Your thoughts about the county resuming, albeit heavily restricted, those operations?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I think when you start making these changes, it's important to see if there are increased risks of transmission in those venues. And so that's really the importance of making sure that you have adequate testing, and then also making sure that you have adequate contact tracing, so that when you do get cases, you can try to figure out where people got them from, so that you can see did opening up the movie theaters and restaurants lead to a spike in cases or not. And if they didn't, then that would be reassuring that maybe you could open up even more.
We're talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Medical Center Children's Hospital, where he's Chief of Pediatric Infectious Diseases, Professor of Medicine at UC Davis. I'd like to hear your questions for him about COVID-19. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. Let's get into the Oxford University AstraZeneca vaccination phase 3 clinical trial. It's been paused because of one subject in the phase 3 trial who has become ill And they'll have to determine now if it was as a result of the vaccine or something else that caused the illness. First of all, how would that be determined, Dr. Blumberg?
Yeah, so I've done some research with vaccines before. I'm not involved in any coronavirus vaccine research. But what typically happens is that when there's an adverse outcome on a patient who's involved in the vaccine trial, then the principal investigator, the person who's in charge of the study at that study site, is the one who ultimately will determine if the event was related or possibly related to the vaccine. Now, it's likely that the principal investigator doesn't know if the patient received the vaccine or not, since these trials are double-blind and randomized. But, for example, let's say we get a report of a patient who died. What if they died from a car accident? Well, then you'd probably say it's not likely related to the vaccine. But what if they died from a heart attack? Well, maybe. Maybe the vaccine might increase risk. We just don't know. And so you'd want a thorough investigation of something as serious as that before you went further. And then you might even unblind it for that one patient to see if they got the placebo or if they got vaccine, and then start looking for other events that might be less serious than dying from a heart attack. Maybe patients visiting to the emergency room for concern for heart attacks. So something very serious like this, it's appropriate to pause, do the appropriate investigation, and then decide if you can keep moving forward or not.
And what would typically be the threshold for a pause? Would it have to be a life-threatening or fatal event? Or could someone just, let's say, developing a bad case of the flu, would that typically be enough to halt the phase 3 trial?
It would have to be something serious that would either result in death or impact somebody's functionality in their life. So something very serious. That's the sort of thing that a vaccine trial would be stopped over. If somebody has pain or soreness at the injection site or a fever for a few days, or they just don't feel well or coughing or something like that, that's not going to stop a vaccine trial.
And I think I saw a majority of people in the trial, and maybe it wasn't this one, but I thought it was, did have some degree of side effect from it, and it continued with that.
Yeah, a lot of what we're seeing from the early reports is it does cause, these vaccines do cause local reactions. So they do cause pain at the injection site, redness and swelling. Generally, it's been reported to last a few days and then to recede. And most of these vaccine trials are using a two-dose series, and that seems to be increased at the second dose.
Okay, we're talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital, 866-893-KPCC. So Dr. Blumberg, what you're describing is what could be, you know, dealt with very quickly if they unblinded for this one participant and found that she or he was part of the placebo group, then, you know, it was totally unrelated. But if it was found that they were actually being given the trial vaccine, it sounds like potentially you could have weeks of investigation going on here.
It's possible. Usually these things are sorted out in a few days, especially with something as important as this, as high level as this. And, you know, the investigators will search for other possible causes. So maybe it wasn't related to, maybe they did suffer something serious, but it wasn't related to the vaccine. Maybe they had a seizure or something, but there's another reason for having the seizure. So in these cases, people are living their lives, and you often find a lot of adverse things happen to people that are unrelated to them participating in a vaccine trial. I remember one study that we had, it was so sad. We had a baby who died, and it turned out what they did was they were crawling around and they got tangled up in a cord from the curtains. Yeah. And of course, now it's recommended not to have those cords around where babies are because that can happen. But
that was a baby in the trial?
as a baby in the trial, and so it was totally unrelated to the to the study and the vaccine, and it was related to the court and to the environment that they were in. So you do get these tragedies that do happen, but they're not necessarily related. And then we all know of some vaccines that don't work out because of safety concerns, and so it's important to investigate these so that we can be reassured.
We're talking with Dr. Dean Blumberg, UC Davis Children's Hospital. How common is it for a clinical trial like this to be paused because of an adverse, potential adverse reaction?
It's not very common, but I think something as high level as this, where you're talking about a vaccine that you're going to give to virtually everybody in the country, everybody on the planet, it's very important to bend over backwards and really be reassured about the safety and protection that you're going to get from these vaccines. And that's why I was pleased by the statement earlier this week from the 9 pharmaceutical manufacturers that stated that they were not going to even ask for approval of any vaccine until they were thoroughly certain that the vaccines were safe and effective.
How important is it to you that any of the vaccines that come forward for approval, complete phase 3 trials, that they're completely transparent and have all their data publicly available? Is that important to you? Is that something you think is required?
There's nothing that's more important when it comes to a COVID vaccine than having full confidence in its safety and protection. If there's any question that it's not safe or that it doesn't work, then people are not going to want to get the vaccine. And if people don't get the vaccine, we're not going to achieve the high level of herd immunity that we need from vaccination to ease a lot of the restrictions that we have now. So it just won't work. It won't work if 10 or 40% of the population get the vaccine. We need a very high level of the population to get that. And to achieve that, we need full public confidence in the vaccine and the approval process.
JSK writes on the page, what if the cause of that single event for the participant can't be determined? What happens to the study?
Well, I think they're going to have to decide how likely it is. And so there needs to be a likelihood attached to that outcome being related to the vaccine or not. And that's where clinical judgment comes in. And that comes in with primarily it's the responsibility of that one principal investigator at that study site. But there will be discussions along with higher level people at the manufacturer's end and also possibly with the FDA.
We have listener Jay in Redlands says, what is the COVID mortality rate for kids age 5 to 17, basically the age demographic of kids going back to school?
Yeah, the mortality rate is low. I don't have the number offhand. The overall mortality rate is about 0.5%, but that includes adults too. So it's much lower than that. Even children who don't die from COVID, though, we are seeing serious complications such as the MIS-C, the multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children. And these children, about 3 or 4 weeks after getting infected, are often requiring hospitalization, including in the intensive care unit, and can be very seriously affected.
Joe in West Hollywood says, I'm worried about the side effect of improper masking now that we're going into flu season. Many are masking for compliance purposes, but I see so many bad habits, including touching the front of masks, placing masks on common surfaces like tables, even reversing masks.
Yeah, I see that too. I'm a medical professional, and so I feel like I know how to wear a mask, but I've been trained. And so I think there's going to be a learning curve for appropriately wearing the mask. In terms of touching the mask, it's very difficult. You know, the mask flips a little bit and you want to push it up, and sometimes it's like too close to your nose and you want to kind of poof it out a little bit. So that's very difficult. I think one of the things that's very reassuring related to COVID is that we know that the vast majority of transmission is via the respiratory route. And so there's a theoretical risk of the increased touching of the mask that you could transmit via contact. But really, that's theoretical, and that's much lower risk, in my opinion, than transmission from the respiratory route. So I think overall, still wearing a mask, even when people are touching the mask frequently, still will result in decreased transmission both to the person who's wearing the mask and to others that the virus may be transmitted to.
Dr. Blumberg, such a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. As always, stay safe and well, and we hope things are going well at UC Davis Children's Hospital and Medical Center. Thank you for joining us.
Great. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. That's Dr. Dean Blumberg, who joins us regularly, part of our all-star team of medical experts with the very latest each day on COVID-19. And thank you for your kind comments and reinforcement on these segments. We really appreciate how much so many of our listeners have come to rely on these segments. I've learned so much hearing our docs each day. Stay tuned. Coming right up in just about 90 seconds, we'll talk about the Motion Picture Academy's announcement yesterday of new inclusion criteria for films under Best Picture consideration. The new rules scheduled to go into effect in the year 2024. We have two terrific guests who are going to talk with us about it coming right up on Air Talk.